For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report highlights Monday's solar eclipse. Steve Schwartz from Equinox, Pennsylvania, checks in with us about his ramp production.
I'm always very excited when maple season is over because it means ramp season is right around the corner.
Ramps are a springtime forest agriculture delicacy and culinary specialty. All of that coming up on today's Farm and Country. But first, news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. The death toll in Taiwan has climbed to at least 13 people following that 7.4 magnitude earthquake that hit on Wednesday. Rescue workers on the island are still trying to rescue more than 440 people who are trapped by debris. NPR's Emily Fang has more.
Most of the people who remain trapped by landslides due to the quake were staying at an upscale hotel at Taroko National Park, which is in the middle of steep mountainous ravines. Rescuers are also now bringing in heavy equipment to try to recover two bodies that were buried under boulders on a hiking trail in the park, which is on the east coast of Taiwan, close to the epicenter. Most of the people killed in the quake on Wednesday were trapped inside mountain tunnels or on hiking trails where they were hit by falling rocks. And aftershocks continue to hit the island, with at least four above magnitude four, rocking Taiwan on Saturday alone. Emily Fang, NPR News, Taipei, Taiwan.
China and the U.S. have agreed to launch a new dialogue that will focus on balanced economic growth. Speaking in China today, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says she'll advocate for a level playing field for American firms and workers. Mexico says it's broken off diplomatic relations with Ecuador after Ecuadorian security forces broke into the Mexican embassy in Quito, as NPR's Ader Peralta reports.
Ecuadorian police officers forced their way into the embassy in order to arrest the country's former vice president. Jorge Glass, who was facing an investigation for corruption and bribery, had been seeking asylum in the Mexican embassy. The Mexican president had said they would try to fly Glass out of Ecuador out of respect for asylum laws. In a statement, the Ecuadorian presidency said they would not allow, quote, any criminal to stay free. Mexico's foreign minister called the raid a flagrant violation of the Vienna Convention. Robert Canseco, the chief of the consular section at the Mexican embassy, tried to stop Ecuadorian police from entering, but he was thrown to the ground.
Esto no es posible.
This is not possible, he said. This is madness. Ader Peralta, NPR News, Mexico City.
House Republicans' long-awaited impeachment trial against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas is set to begin next week. NPR's Claudia Grisales reports.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said he expects the trial against Secretary Mayorkas to begin Thursday, the day after the chamber is expected to receive the articles of impeachment. The move comes after the Republican-controlled House impeached Mayorkas in February. However, GOP Speaker Mike Johnson delayed the transmittal of the articles to the Senate until after Congress settled budget plans for the current fiscal year. While Schumer has been tight-lipped on the next steps, many expect the Republican impeachment effort against Mayorkas to die in the Senate with a quick trial.
This is NPR.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Steve Schwartz from Equinox, Pennsylvania, checks in with us about his ramp production. Ramps are a forest agriculture delicacy and culinary specialty available in the springtime. But first, here is Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report that highlights Monday's solar eclipse. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. For the second time in 7 years, a total solar eclipse will cross the United States. On Monday, the eclipse will travel through Mexico before entering the U.S. and Texas. From there, it will cut a diagonal path from the Mississippi Valley through the Midwest to Maine. The path of totality will come very close to the Catskill region. At the time of maximum eclipse, the sun will be more than 93% covered by the moon in our region. The sun will resemble a waning crescent moon with a thin sliver of its left-hand side visible. Total solar eclipses occur when the moon passes directly between the sun and Earth. The daytime becomes a deep twilight and the sun's corona shines brilliantly in the darkened sky. Also, the temperature drops 5 to 15 degrees. The moon's orbit around Earth is tilted slightly from the horizontal, so most of the time the moon passes either just above or below the sun. Safety practices do need to be followed when viewing the eclipse. Most important is to not look directly at the sun. The sun's rays can cause permanent eye damage. Special glasses can be purchased that have filters that will allow you to look at the sun safely. The eclipse will begin around 2:10 p.m. and will last until about 4:35 p.m. with the maximum eclipse occurring at 3:25 p.m. Take advantage of this unique opportunity to see a near total solar eclipse on Monday. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future StarTalk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and StarTalk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
Here is community member Steve Schwartz from Equinunk, Pennsylvania. Steve grows and harvests ramps, a culinary treat in the garlic onion allium family that emerges in the springtime. He received a grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to observe and study sustainability of this forest product. We begin with a bit of previous conversation and continue into the present time.
I'm Steve Schwartz, Chief Forager for Delaware Valley Ramps, and we're standing in the middle of the ramp lands on the banks of the Delaware in Equinunk, Pennsylvania. We're looking at a plot that I have cleared, one of six, that will be part of a research study. We received a grant from SARE, which is a program of the USDA, that funds farmers to do research. And I'm a forest farmer, and I had a research idea, so I submitted a proposal, and it got funded. The idea is people are all concerned about the sustainability of ramps and how much you should pick and when you should pick and not eliminating all of the ramps. And in our business, we have ways and processes that ensure that the ramps are picked sustainably, that the property is managed for reproduction, and after 16 years, it doesn't look like we have picked all the ramps. In fact, they're coming up right now and they're all over the place. But there are a couple of other ideas out there, and this is one of them. When consumers, home cooks, and when commercial cooks get ramps, they might use the leaves, they might use the bulb, they might use the entire plant, but the one part that they all discard is the root plate at the bottom of the bulb. So we propose taking a look in a controlled study way at replanting the root plate of ramps that have been harvested and seeing if we can get new plants to emerge from the existing root plate plot. And half of them will be what we call early ramps, which would be 2- and 3-leaf plants that are harvested before the bulb has started to swell out. And half of them will be mature plants, 2- and 3-leaf plants that where the bulb has swelled to the prime size, which we call the teardrop stage. Between those two sections, we will vary the amount of the bulb to include. So in one treatment, we will include 1/4 inch of the bulb, and another treatment will include 1/2 inch of the bulb. And this plot, which is plot 2, I've added a control section. So what we will do here is replant the entire bulb from 2- and 3-leaf late stage plants to see both the survival in the next year, but also to see how large the plants get. We think that will get pretty good survival from all of the treatments, but they may come up as first-year seedlings or first- or second-year seedling plants, whereas if we plant the entire bulb, we may see that they're more mature, that they will be more like 3 or 4 year old plants. That's just the control.
You speak with such knowledge. You must have experience with this, and maybe there's something special about your property, the soil, the location. Let's start with that. Tell us about your property and your soil and your background that you know so much information.
The property is a flat. So a flat is a large area in the river valley where the river can widen out, and during big floods, it can subsume the property. In the 2004, 2005, and 2006 floods, there was probably 2 to 6 feet of water on the flat, and the soil composition reflects that. The way I like to think of it is, since the last ice age, 10,000 years ago, the property has been flooded every 1 or 5 or 10 years and has left an eighth of an inch or a quarter inch of sediment. So there are no rocks. It's all sandy, loamy topsoil, which I understand, not having much experience with other property, is pretty unique for Wayne County.
Yes, that means you're not digging up Pennsylvania potatoes. It's highly prized soil. I think Willowisp Farm also has that.
Yeah, it's the same context and same soil as Willowisp. Greg once told me that after 3 years of tilling the land, he had dug up 13 rocks, and it's pretty much the same here.
You're aware of so much. I'd like to know what your background is and if it includes knowledge about the Lenapes. Do you think they used ramps in their cuisine?
I'm sure they use everything that occurred naturally, and I'm pretty sure they also planted food crops. I heard that from Ann Rhodes, the botanist emeritus for Pennsylvania, the author of the Native Plants of Pennsylvania book, that at Point Mountain, the lowlands were planted with nut trees as kind of a plantation by the Lenapes. This property has been used for various things over the years, working backwards from today when it's pretty fully forested with deciduous hardwoods, including a lot of maple trees. Before that, it was pasture. Before that, it was maybe tilled for planting. And before that, this was the banking grounds for the log rafts that were the trees that were taken off the hills. They were brought down here and float down to Pennsylvania. And before that, this was a hunting and gathering and camping ground seasonally for the Lenapes. The property has been used and managed by many people over many years.
And you have it now. Here we are in Northeast Pennsylvania, and it looks like with these trees, you do maple syrup also, and there's a relationship between the ramps and maple syrup season?
For me, maple is the gateway to ramps, and one of the reasons is that during mapling process, I'm going around and gathering the sap from the buckets on the maple trees, and typically the first ramps I ever see are on the soil around the maple trees where we've kicked off the leaf litter during the winter. But it's also phenologically the precursor to ramps. Maples will stop producing when it warms up and they start flowering out, and the ramps will start to emerge. Then the ramps will grow before the maples develop their leaves when there's plenty of sunlight on the forest floor. And then once they produce seeds by the fall, there's a full forest canopy, it's wet, it's cool, and the ramp seeds need cool, wet conditions to be able to germinate and then create the seedlings the following year. There's a direct relationship between maples and ramps, and Penn State, when they have looked at ramp lands around the state, find that maples, having the presence of sugar maples, is one of the key indicators of having good ramp lands.
So when you brought the property, did you find the ramps already here and you're sustaining the history of them being here, or have you planted them?
So I bought the property 17 years ago. I contracted in the spring of 2006. I gave the sellers 6 months to close because they were elderly and were trying to figure out what they wanted to do. In the meantime, the flood of 2006 came through. I didn't really get back to look at the property until we closed in September of 2006. So I never saw the ramps when they were out and green and luscious. I didn't see the property. And I knew nothing about the woodlands, the managing the forest, or the process of cultivating or managing ramp lands and harvesting and selling. But I did know about ramps because I had some friends that were chefs and had introduced me to them. And it wasn't until the fall of 2006, after I closed, that I was walking around with my neighbor, who was a naturalist, and he said to me, "Steve, do you see those little black BBs over there?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Those are ramp seeds." And once I keyed my eyes to the little black BBs, I could tell they were all over the place. And so the following spring, when I was still going back and forth to the city, I asked a few of my chef friends, "Would you be interested in me bringing you some ramps?" And they said, "Sure, and we'll trade them for food." That first season, I harvested a few ramps. I traded them for dinner, and it was a great discovery. And at the end of the ramp season, my chef friend said, "Stephen, we love your ramps, but it's too difficult to remember how much we owe you. You know, next year we'll just buy them from you." So then I was in the ramp business.
Well, and I can see how that would be very successful. I have eaten ramps. I've bought them at the farmer's market. And from what I understand, they're a wild leek, like a cross between garlic and onions. And the leaves, I've eaten the entire plant. They're just lovely.
Yeah, they're the first green thing of spring. Everyone loves to see them. They can be used in multiple ways. You can use the bulbs to pickle or to roast or to put into hummus, which I do. You can use the leaves raw in salads or cook them up or grill them. You can dry out the leaves and crush them into salt to make ramp salt, or even freeze the leaves to use during the winter when you're making things like stews or other cooked dishes.
Maybe we've whetted the appetite of some listeners. And do you have a website if people want to know more about your project or how to contact you about your harvest? How would they do that?
There's a website, DelawareValleyRamps.com. There's a Facebook page, and there's even an Instagram page. There's information there about what we do, and there are recipes there in case you're looking to harvest some ramps and use them, and some of our favorite recipes, and some other information about how we look at the ramp lands and manage them during the season.
We look forward to hearing more about this project. From my research, it says that this is going to go into 2024 and 2025, so we'll have to keep an eye on the project with updates.
The grant is multiple years. We will do all of the transplanting this year, but in order to know it's successful, we have to look at what emerges in the spring of 2024 as well as in the spring of 2025. And our hope is that we get mature enough plants to show signs of being able to produce seeds and reproduce by bulb division after 2 years. But we don't really know yet if that will be the case. So we'll be looking at survival. We'll be looking at the size of the plants as we harvest them in the succeeding years and other characteristics. And then we'll be reporting out. Hopefully there will be enough information in the study to generate a paper or two so we can share it with other people and give people that use ramps another way to help sustain their survival.
I spoke with Steve last week by telephone to hear about his ramp project and production now that it's springtime 2024.
So last year we established the plots, we prepared the propagules, we planted them and marked them and recorded all the data, and we have that data. It's pretty much what one might expect, which is that the later the harvested plant, the larger, the more it weighed, the more leaves it had, the bigger the section, the propagule size, of the bulb and the root plate. I think our hypothesis is that the more of the bulb or the heavier of the planting section, the more success. But ramps are just beginning to come up right now. We're seeing some early plants in sunnier areas. And it's a little bit too early to check the success of the trial. First thing we're going to look for this year is how many plants came back and see if there's any correlation between what we planted and what came back. I think more importantly is, do they come back as first-year seedlings, second-year plants, third-year plants? They were all mature plants when they were planted, but will they come back as mature plants? So that will be interesting for us to see this year. What I focus on at the end of the ramp season is how many of the plants send up flowers and how many plants form what we call ramp capers or the fruit of the ramp, and how many of those turn into seeds. And I think we saw pretty much an average number of flowers and average number of seeds last year. Once they form the seeds and drop them, then the question is, are we seeing first-year seedlings? And we'll be doing that when we're out there, both checking on the research and doing our harvesting this year. Ramps have a very short season. They senesce quickly at the end when they start to send up their flower. And for me, the business side of the ramps is over then. I'm not going to sell ramps that are turning yellow. I focus more on whether they're producing flowers and seeds.
I trust that you will have a bountiful harvest, because there's a lot of folks that love to come and pick ramps. They're a culinary, delightful experience. I've eaten many. Let's talk about when you have folks on your property up there in Equinox. Talk about this you pick that you have.
A few years ago, we decided to add a business we call Ramps You Pick. And it's like apples you pick, pumpkins, blueberries. You go to a farm, you are given free rein, and you go out and pick. Everyone knows what a blueberry or an apple or a pumpkin looks like, but a lot of people have seen ramps in restaurants, but they've never seen them in nature. So we focus the Ramps You Pick event on helping people identify them, understanding how they establish and survive and flourish in the forest, and how to select the proper ramps to harvest, and teach them how to dig them. And then people go out and they are given free rein to dig as many as they want in an hour or so. And then we come up and wash them and weigh them and talk about their shelf life and talk about how they can be used. And everybody gets a treat of a ramp dish, such as ramp hummus or ramp quiche, and recipes to take home. Some people are coming to Ramps You Pick, and we have repeat visitors who just love to get out onto the property amongst the ramps in the spring, overlooking the Delaware, and do some harvesting and for their own use. But quite a few people are coming to harvest ramps to transplant on their property and establish new patches, which makes me really happy, because that's another way of enhancing sustainability, is by broadening the extent of where they are. And ramps will pretty much grow anywhere. I know people that have grown them in their sunny gardens and or eastern Sierras, but they won't grow and flourish and reproduce by seed formation and germination unless they have the right conditions. So we talk a lot about that too, and where to select on their property to plant the ramps, how to manage them 365 days a year. So it doesn't take a whole lot to manage them throughout the year. It does pay off by being out there to see that they are producing flowers or seeds or subdividing by bulb division, and that they are expanding their range. And it's important to do that many times during the year, not just when they're nice and tender and juicy and you want to eat them, but throughout the rest of the year. We decided that Ramps You Pick would start this year on April 19th. It occurs on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. There are two 2-hour slots each day, and it goes for 4 weeks through May 19th. If you're interested in ramps you pick this year, I think the first 2 or 3 weeks will be prime. And there's a URL for this. Tickets are for sale through Eventbrite, so the URL is ramps-u-pick2024.eventbrite.com. We'd love to see you and share with you the bounty of our ramps. We limit the amount of people at one time, so there are no more than 10 people in each of the sections. And we also limit where people pick. So we move through the forest just like we would harvesting. We start at one side of the woods. Each day and each week, we move up so that people have a fresh plot, mainly because we don't want people to be harvesting ramps where other people have walked and, you know, damaged the leaves or anything. It's a good way to spread the harvest throughout the property, and it's a good way to give people a fresh shot at the ramps.
Can we say that this is a family event? Children can participate?
There are family tickets available, and we've had lots of kids. We've had a couple of infants out in the woods. You can bring your dog if it's well-behaved or leave it in the car. There's parking. We've had extended families. We've had 6-8 people come as a group. There's a website for Delaware Valley Ramps, which is www.delawarevalleyramps.com, and the email is info@delawarevalleyramps.com. I'm always very excited when maple season is over because it means ramp season is right around the corner.
Well, thank you so much once again.
Thanks, Rosie.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr speaking online with Steve Schwartz, community member from Equinox, Pennsylvania. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteer Keith Hubbard. Special thanks goes to our guest, Steve Schwartz from Equinox, Pennsylvania, speaking to us on the topic of ramps production as forest agriculture. This has been your host, Rosie Starr. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Listen on air at 90.5 FM, on your phone or smart speaker, and online at wjffradio.org. Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.
Sky watchers from Mexico to Maine and beyond are gathering for a spectacular cosmic event.
There's the total eclipse of the sun right now.
Whoa! I'm Scott Tong.
And I'm Robin Young. Follow the total solar eclipse across the country, live as it happens, with us. It'll be a mix of celebration, reflection, history, science on this big day. Join us for live special coverage from NPR News.
Monday afternoon at 2, right here on Radio Catskill.
The fight against disinformation is more complicated than ever. And in a record year for